Java location. And being that I've been running the last 3 months fueled by caffeine, I'm very happy to be here. And so I just want to say how exciting it is to be in an RV traveling around your state. Because when I first came to your state as a little boy, it was in an RV, and it was headed by my grandma, who was taking me to her home. My grandma's from Des Moines. She was born and raised here. I've got a lot of family migrated in the late 1800s up from Alabama to be coal miners in Buxton, Iowa. Some of you all know that, which is a town that was way ahead of its time. It was where European immigrants, descendants of slaves, all came together, lived together, descended into coal mines together to scrape out their American dream. And so I just want you all to know that sort of our family values was this powerful thing that happened when people come together, work together, stand together, see each other across those lines that divide us, and affirm the ties that bind us in common cause and common purpose. And this is one of those times where I worry about our nation, because a lot of folks think that we are descending into tribalism, which is us against them politics, divide and conquer politics, fear-based politics. When I've been raised to say that the best of who we are is always when we stand up and try to create a more beloved community, where we all know that we're in this together and we share a common destiny, no matter what your background is, it's one nation, and we desperately need to put more indivisible into this one nation under God. And I'm gonna tell you this, it's really funny, because we as Democrats have to watch each other, check each other in this election, that we don't descend into taking on the tactics of the person we're trying to replace. Because I tell you, we can't win a fight on his terms and his turf. The way we win this is calling to the higher aspirations of our nation again. Look, I walked into, I was here a couple last month in Iowa, and this big guy comes over to me who sees another big guy. I'm a former tight end for Stanford University, former All-American football player. The older I get, the better I was. And this guy puts his arm around me and says, "Hey, man, I want you to punch Donald Trump in the face." And I look at him and I go, "Dude, that's a felony." We have never in our history, the gardens of our democracy have always had the weeds of bigotry and hate and demagoguery. You all know this, McCarthyism, you all know this, Father Conklin. In fact, there's a whole political party that was anti-immigration, but back then it was against Irish and Italians. They called themselves the Know-Nothings. But we always beat those demagogues. We always beat those people who traffic in bigotry and hatred, and who want to divide our country up on race or religion. We always beat them, not by taking on their tactics, but by awakening the moral imagination of this country to see us for who we are. How did we beat Bull Connor? Did we bring bigger dogs and more powerful fire hoses to fight him? No. We beat him by standing up and calling to the character of our country, which responded. Remember, we are a nation. I live in the central ward of Newark, New Jersey. When I came out of law school, I moved into a really tough neighborhood, and I still live there now. I'm the only United States senator that lives in an inner city community that's below the poverty line. And we've made a lot of changes in that neighborhood. But I always say I got my BA from Stanford, but my PhD on the streets of Newark from some of the greatest professors I've ever met. And some of the smartest, wisest people don't have letters after their name. They're just folks that know common sense and are willing to stand up for their community. And this incredible woman that I met, she was the tenant president on the fifth floor of the projects. She was one of these people that just challenged me. She challenged me because her son was murdered in the lobby of the building in which I would move into. I ended up living in those high-rise projects for almost a decade. And I always wondered why this woman stayed in these projects after her son was murdered. I just, the horror of that. And she looks at me almost insulted by the question. She was about 5 feet and a smidgen tall, but she scared me more than a UCLA linebacker. And she was just tough, and she looks at me when I asked her the question. She was like insulted by the question. She goes, "Why do I still live in brick towers?" And I go, "Yes, ma'am, why?" She goes, "Why am I still in apartment 5A? And I go, "That's what I asked, Miss Jones." She's like, "Why am I still the tenant president since these buildings were built in 1969? And I go, "Yes, ma'am, why?" And she goes, "Corey, because I'm in charge of Homeland Security." She was this woman that said, "I may not have a presidential appointment, I may not be a cabinet secretary, but every day I stand up to protect my community." And she taught me what hope is. She taught me that hope is the active conviction that despair will never have the last word. We are a nation that has always seen in our darkest moments and our most challenging times, we've defined who we are, which is people of hope. We've never surrendered to that darkness. When four girls died in a bombing in Birmingham, the horror of that, did we just say, oh, that's awful, and have ourselves break down? No, we rose up and we changed laws. We created the civil rights movement, doubled down after that. When you all remember this, when women were throwing themselves out windows at the shirtwaist factory fire, dying on the pavement, that horrible moment, we said we're gonna be agents of hope, and we began to change workers' rights and workers' conditions. We are the nation that we are because we have never given in, never given up. Even in the darkest times, we've rallied together, and that's the word. I love the themes of self-reliance and rugged individualism. You can't be a farmer. You can't make it in life unless you have those values deep in your blood. But you know what? Rugged individualism didn't get us to the moon. It didn't beat the Nazis or Jim Crow. We did those things together. So you all, I'm looking forward to going around shaking a lot of hands, but I want you all to know I'm running for president not just because of the policy ideas that I have. I know the 2020 elections doesn't mean the year, it means the number of people running 2020. I want you all to know I am running because I believe in us. And I think that this moment doesn't call for something small. We got to think bigger than just, hey, this election's just about beating Donald Trump, getting one guy out of office. No, this has got to be about something bigger, because a lot of the problems we all are struggling with were going on long before Donald Trump was elected. In my neighborhood, we have kids drinking out of a bottle of water, because from water systems in this country, from Flint, Michigan, to Newark, to even here in Iowa, we have infrastructure that's falling apart, not serving our kids' health and well-being. There were attacks on public schools going on in this state far before Donald Trump was elected. There were attacks on unions and the right to union organizing. Union membership's been going down a long time. There are people in my neighborhood who work longer hours than my parents, but still need food stamps at our local bodega, and that's been going on a lot longer. There's been gun violence on the rise in this country for a long time. More people have died in my lifetime due to gun violence than all the wars in our country's history. From the Revolutionary War to the present, more people have died in gun violence in the last 50 years than all those wars combined. That was going on before Donald Trump. So we've got to recalibrate a little bit. I agree that the fundamental floor has got to be, can you beat Donald Trump? But that can't end our aspirations. We are bigger dreamers and bigger thinkers than that. This has got to be about reclaiming the destiny of this democracy and making it work for our seniors in retirement whose Social Security checks don't go far enough. Reclaiming the idea that in America, healthcare is a right for all Americans. It means reclaiming the idea that every child in every zip code should have a great public school that is a cathedral of learning for their minds and their spirits. We gotta reclaim the idea that we're a nation that should lead the planet Earth in the well-being of our children, not right now to lead the planet Earth in industrial nations and infant mortality and maternal mortality. We gotta be the nation that says we're gonna lead the planet Earth like we did to beat the Nazis, that we can lead the planet Earth in dealing with the horrors of climate change and the threat that is. And so I want to end with just this moment, and then I'll go around. Not only will I talk to people, I'm going to get like 4 cups of coffee because I'm really drunk. I live on the stuff. But I just want to tell you all, look, I am where I am because of Americans like that woman in the projects who said, I will not ever accept what is. I'm going to fight for what can be. I am here because of groups of folks that came together on weekends like all of you when we have a lot of things we could be doing. You're here not just because I'm the best bald candidate in the race. You're here because you love your country and you want to hear what this fellow from Jersey has to say. You're here out of patriotism, and patriotism is love of country, and you cannot love your country unless you love your fellow countrymen and women. And love says, it's not a sentiment, it says, hey, I may not know you, I may not pray like you, but if your kids don't have a great public school, my kids are lesser off for it. Love says, I may not know you, We may not look alike, but I will stand and fight for your rights, because injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are here because of that kind of patriotic love. And I am here quite literally, if you let me tell this last story, I'm here quite literally because of that kind of patriotic love. It was a group of people like this that met on the weekend 50 years ago next month that found this family coming up from the South. My parents were looking for places in New Jersey to live. And the best public schools is what my mom wanted, which in 1969 happened to be in white neighborhoods. And they would go to look at a house, and the real estate agent would show up and see it's a black family and go, oh, I'm so sorry, this house is no longer for sale, or it's been pulled off the market, or already sold. And my parents were distraught. So what did they find? A group like y'all, patriots, who met on the weekends, mostly white folks. And they said to my parents, we are here as Americans. And we know from some of their faith traditions that you welcome the stranger. They knew from the ideals of this country, one nation under God, they knew that they were going to stand up for my parents. And so they put together this sting operation. Every time my parents would go look at a house, they'd be told it was sold. A volunteer white couple would go right behind them, find out the house was still for sale. On the house that I grew up in, my parents were told it was sold. A white couple came, found it was for sale. They put a bid on the house. The bid was accepted. And papers were drawn up, and a closing was set. And on the day of the closing, the real estate agent's office, the white couple didn't show up. My father did, and a volunteer lawyer walked into the real estate agent's office to confront the real estate agent. And that real estate agent looked at them and was shocked to see my dad, realized he had been caught. The story should be over now, but it wasn't. He stands up so angry that he punches my dad in the face. And then he sings a dog on my dad. And let me tell you, as I was growing up, every time my dad told that story, the dog got bigger. Eventually he's like, boy, I had to fight a pack of wolves to get through this house. Well, by the time I went out in life, I got all these, you know, degrees from Stanford, Oxford, Yale. My dad's not happy. He's like, boy, you got more degrees in the month of July, but you ain't hot. Life is not about the degrees you get. It's about the service you give. Get out there and make a difference in this world, because people made a difference for you. So what's the first thing I did is I went to Newark, New Jersey, and started fighting for people's housing rights as a housing lawyer. That city elected me their mayor, and we turned that city around. I went on to the United States Senate and decided to do what a lot of senators do that have a high sense of self-regard. I decided to write a book. And if your name is Booker, it's a lot of pressure, y'all. And so I had to go back and fact check. I went back to find the people that met in a room like this that changed my family's destiny. And I found that lawyer who organized that sting operation. And I talked to him. He confirmed all the stories, y'all. It was not a pack of wolves. It was just a dog. And you know what? This is what shook me. And this is the spirit I want to end you with right now. I asked him why. Why would a guy in the 1960s who has just started his business, who was busy, who was barely making ends meet, supporting a young family, why would this white guy in Jersey take so much of his time and effort to help black families coming from afar to move in his neighborhood? And this is what he told me. This is the spirit in this room, and this is what he said. He said, well, I remember the moment I made the decision. And I said, the moment? What was the moment? And he said to me, he goes, I was sitting at home in 1965, years before I was born, watching TV. This is back when we had only three channels, y'all. You remember this? They'd go off at like 11 o'clock, no more TV. There was nothing to do. That's why some people think that's why we had higher birth rates back then. And he's watching. I looked up the movie he was watching. He was watching a movie called Judgment at Nuremberg. But they broke away from that movie. Breaking news, they showed a bridge in Alabama called the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And there were these marchers that started in Selma, were trying to get to Montgomery. They get stopped on that bridge by Alabama state troopers who would not let these civil rights protesters pass. And you know what they did? Those Alabama state troopers shot tear gas at them. They came in with horses and billy clubs and started beating them. And you know what? That guy on that couch was horrified to see this, what some people call Bloody Sunday. But he didn't stay on that couch. He gets up and says, you know what? I got to do something. I can't afford a plane ticket to Alabama. I can't close my business for one day. But he did the calculation in his mind and said, I'm an American. And so maybe I'll just do the best I can with what I have, where I am. and he decided he could spend an hour a week of pro bono work to help in the civil rights cause. And this great American, this white man, just basically said, I'm going to call around. And he found a group that met on the weekends in a living room, and they said, gosh, we need some help. They put together the sting operation, and he said years passed, and he gets a case file of a family trying to move north. And he says he'll never forget looking at this case file and the two names on it. And he said to me, the two names, Corey, were Carrie and Carolyn Booker, your parents. I am literally standing before you right now as a United States Senator. I am literally standing before you right now as a presidential candidate because of rules like this, of Americans in a moral moment in that generation that did not stay on the couch, who didn't settle for small things, but dreamed that they could be a part of a dramatic change, that they can take a country that is being threatened by bigotry and hate and bring about a more beloved community. That they may not be able to solve every problem, but they know the tradition in this country. When we stand up for each other, we change the destiny of generations not yet born. And this election, I'm sorry, it is not just about one guy and one office. It's not just about get rid of him and all our problems will be solved. It's not just about the candidates we have, because none of us are saviors. This is about America, and who are we going to be to each other, and how are we going to take back control of the destiny of this nation. And so I want to challenge everybody here. I'm going to walk around and shake hands, but I would hope people here support me. I'm hoping folks here are going to decide to caucus for me, but I'm running for president for a bigger cause than even that. It's not about me and not about my ego. The bigger cause is that I believe in us. And the bigger cause, I'm worrying about the dream of this nation and what's going to happen in my children's generation. You know, 95% of baby boomers did better than their parents economically. We live in a country where my generation, who's inherited all of the work and all the sacrifice, we could be the first generation not to do better than our parents economically, life expectancy, on so many rates, have higher disparities in income. And so the bigger cause I'm fighting for the time that I have on the national stage, is I want to reignite the idea of the American dream. Where King was slain, the first time I went to Lorraine Motel, I saw a plaque there written where he was slain, and it's words from scripture that I want to tell to you and then stop. And by the way, I'm going to recite words from scripture, but I'm one of these guys who would much rather hang out with a nice atheist than a mean Christian any day. I'm one of these fellows that says, hey, stop. Before you tell me about your religion, first show it to me and how you treat other people.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. But the words that are written there, where King was slain, that are a challenge to our generation, people coming after King, were the words that Joseph's brothers recited, proclaimed when they saw Joseph coming before they grabbed this guy with his coat of many colors and threw him in a pit to die. But you know he wouldn't die in that pit. He would rise up out of that pit and lead a generation, lead a nation through crisis. And America, we're in that pit right now. As long as one American is in a pit for unjust reasons, we're all there. Whether it's that school teacher who reaches in her own pocket to pay for things her kids need, even though they don't know how they're going to pay their student loans, we're in that pit. When there's somebody home right now who can't be here because they're taking care of a spouse with Alzheimer's and struggling, seeing all their life savings being poured out, and doesn't know who's going to help them or how they're going to make it through, we're in that pit with them. But whether that's veteran right now, who we came up with all the money to send them overseas, but somehow when they came home from war with invisible wounds, we don't do enough to help them out. And so what does it say where King was slain? The words of Joseph's brothers, it says this: behold, here cometh the dreamer. Let us slay him and see what becomes of the dream. What is going to become of our dream, the dream of America, the dream that our ancestors fought for? And in this Memorial Day, we know they died for that dream on beaches from Iwo Jima to Normandy. What will become of our dream, where our ancestors sacrificed, black and white, Christian, Jewish, all Americans coming together generation after generation for the dream? What will happen to our dream? Will it become diluted? Will it become diminished? Will it become divided against itself, or will we all as Americans individually, with a chorus of conviction, will we say that it's our generation's turn to dream big dreams again? I believe that if we're willing to dream again in our generation, bold dreams, defiant dreams, dreams of America anew, if we can do that in this moral moment and make this election not about one guy in one office, but the very dream of America that we reignite, if we do that, I don't care at the end of the day who you all support individually, because you're supporting our nation. We dream like that and work like that. God, if we love like that, I promise you that our tomorrows are going to be better than our yesterdays. I promise you that we will be a nation where justice rolls down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. I promise you, if we can be those kind of dreamers again in America, then this nation will rise. Thank you, everybody. Chairman here, but there's somebody that I work with in Washington who is a heroic person that is here as well. I have watched this person over the years stand and fight and work and demand, and he is a defiant dreamer about what America can be. I just want to say thank you very much for Congressman Losak being here as well. Weapon is his wife Terry. She's here right now as well. So let's get some coffee. I'm going to shake some hands, answer any questions you all have. So thank you very much.